Hour three here. Triple option. Darby, KD, Rod Babers, Brad Kellner, Kevin Dunn. Blake Snell was feeling like a gangster last night. And unfortunately, Kevin Cash did not continue to go with him. We'll get back to more of that coming up at 6 o'clock. 2 hours in, 2 hours to go. Appreciate everyone listening. If you've missed anything, you want to go back and podcast it or any of the great shows we have here on the Horn, get to hornfm.com. Also, some Texas stuff coming up a little bit. A little tease for Rod's rant of the day today, Rod.
We'll talk about why Oklahoma State's defense is not a fluke.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. Nice segue there, because we will talk some Texas football coming up next. Let's stay in the state and stay with the sport, though, with the Dallas Cowboys. And weird, kind of a weird spot right now, guys, as we've talked about some of the trade rumors that have been going on with the Texans. Dallas, it's going to be a little trickier considering their some of their contracts and some of the situations they're in. But they did get Everson Griffin off the books, and they were able to trade him. And now you're at a spot where one of the guys who BK brought up yesterday. So I asked BK, the Cowboys fan, resident Cowboys fan, who are some guys you'd like to see off the books? And right away, I think you said Worley and Poe. Mm-hmm. And you said, if we can get anything for him. Mm-hmm. And by the report today, the Cowboys are thinking along those lines, but I'm not sure there's going to be anything for him.
No, yeah, the report you're talking about came from Tom Pelissero of the NFL Network earlier today. He said the Cowboys have informed both Dontari Poe and Daryl Worley that they'll be released if Dallas can't trade them today.
God.
So the much-needed defensive overhaul for the Dallas Cowboys continues, gentlemen.
Isn't that just kind of a double punch? Rod, did you ever get that one? It's like, hey, we're not sure how today's going to go, but either way, you got to clear everything out. You're not going to be here today. Now, if you have any value left, which we doubt, we're going to be able to trade you probably for nothing, for peanuts. We'd take that. If not,
for what?
We're just going to fire you. Peanuts.
Peanuts.
Okay.
Peanuts.
Yeah, say it slowly.
Not what I heard.
no, but I don't.
Who's that Asian real estate agent? Can he help me out?
Oh, yes.
Oh, Chris Waters.
Chris Waters.
I didn't think we were taking that on the air.
I'm sorry. My bad.
No,
my bad.
That's good. I like it. All right.
And O's got fisted.
I'll get us back on track. But what I'll say is usually giving you the heads up, that's considered a form of courtesy that they would at least let you know what their plans are. Most of the time, the NFL doesn't give a damn about you and your, you know. And,
interesting take. I didn't.
They don't inform you of anything. They just trade you or they'll just cut you or release you.
I didn't think of it that way, but you would know.
Yeah, you don't even get the courtesy of going home and tell your woman, hey, babe. And just so you know, some things are about to change.
Mm-hmm.
No, doesn't happen that way. So for them to get the heads up,
a little bit of courtesy.
Some people, I wouldn't want the heads up. Don't tell me that you're going to do that. Just do it.
Right.
You know, we're thinking about trading you. If nobody in the league wants your sorry behind,
you're gone.
We're just going to cut you loose. Okay? Have a good day.
That's what we think. That's what we think of it.
That's what we're thinking about. We'll get back to you.
We think enough of you to let you know five hours beforehand.
That's like somebody telling you that before they break up with you, they're thinking about breaking up with you. Like, no, well, just do it when you're going to do it. Don't tell me beforehand you're thinking about breaking up with me, and you'll let me know in a couple of hours how you feel. You know what I mean? Like, no. So I don't think it's that courteous, but I guess it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I was cut by a lot of teams, and nobody ever informed me beforehand that they were going to cut me.
So you never had that experience.
I never had that courtesy,
yeah.
No.
Well, for the Dallas Cowboys, I mean, they need Ty Pennington to revamp this defense. They need an extreme makeover defense decision.
I didn't even get that reference at first, and then I got it with the name. Good job.
Yeah, I mean, Worley's been terrible. He's been horrible all year, and he basically got benched, right? He only played one snap for the Cowboys in Sunday's loss to Washington, so no real surprise there. That guy was already pretty much not playing at all. And Dontari Poe has given you absolutely nothing. I mean, the Cowboys signed him to a 2-year, $10 million contract this offseason, so it's only the first year of that deal. And in 7 games, he's got 3 tackles. No TFLs,
wow.
No sacks, no quarterback hits. I mean, he should have been paying the Cowboys to play, considering his lack of production that he's given this year. He's been a non-factor for Dallas. So, yeah, I mean, we talked about it yesterday after the Everson Griffin deal was made. It'll give the Cowboys some opportunities to play some younger guys, right? Because this year is obviously done. I know the NFC East is terrible, so technically the Cowboys are still in the mix. But I don't know if the Cowboys are going to win another game this year the way they've looked over the past couple of weeks. So try to find out what you have for next year, and you do that by trading your veteran guys who have given you nothing and giving your younger guys an opportunity to play on Sundays.
You know, it's free.
Todd Archer is reporting right now, it came down during the show.
Oh, they released him?
That they released him.
So nobody won?
No one. So Don Terry Poe, and Darryl Worley.
And this gets to me, a bigger issue, and this is about, you know, talent evaluation, and, you know, it's about knowing your team well enough and, you know, talent development, knowing where guys fit when you acquire those pieces. You look at the free agent acquisitions for the Cowboys. Ha-ha, Clinton Dix didn't even make the damn team, and you paid him money. You got Gerald McCoy. That's just bad luck, but because of IR, he never really took a snap. Everson Griffin, you traded him to Detroit because it didn't work out. Dontari Poe, released. Darryl Worley now, released. Darian Thompson, that ain't really working out for you either. I think they had one of the guys opt out, Maurice Kennedy, right? One of the DBs that opted out. But
he would have been cut by now.
He'd have been cut. But you go look at all the free agent acquisitions, and Aldon Smith, because now Andy Dalton's on the concussion protocol, he's probably the only one that really worked out for you.
And it really worked out.
That's the one that Mike McCarthy found in a gym.
Yeah.
Working out in the offseason.
Thanks to Jay Glazer.
Exactly. So that wasn't really the Cowboys front office finding that. So that's an indictment on the Cowboys front office, man. None of those acquisitions really worked out for you.
And I'll admit, I was pretty excited about some of those
moves. I was excited
about
a lot of them.
I mean, we knew those guys weren't in their primes anymore, but you figured they'd still be able to give you something, right? Ha-ha, Clinton Dix had a decent year for the Bears last year. You felt like he was an upgrade with what you've had at safety over the last few years. Clearly he wasn't. He didn't even make the team. Dontari Poe, I mean, that guy's been a very, very solid interior defensive lineman for a number of years in this league. Same with Gerald McCoy, right? A guy's been a Pro Bowler six times. Yeah. Now he got hurt, so we never saw that. But yeah, I mean, we were confident and optimistic, and I was pumped with the Everson Griffin pickup
too.
I mean, I thought that guy was going to make a tremendous impact for this Dallas Cowboys defense, and well, the one thing he did, or at least the one thing he speculated to have done, has been the rat who went to James Slater and ratted on all the coaches. That might have been his most impactful play as a Dallas Cowboy. So, yeah, those moves that looked like they could work in the offseason, all of those felt pretty low risk, high reward, but they turned out to be all low reward, unfortunately.
They did, except for Smith. I mean, Smith worked out.
Smith is a really good one for it. That worked out really
well.
And
McCoy, like you said, that's just bad luck. I do think that's really huge, and the linebackers, who have not been good, only look worse because in Nolan's scheme, you need someone like McCoy, or like I said yesterday, like Malik Collins. Who ended up, moving
on. Penetrating interior D lineman.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the type of guy you need, and they really haven't had that.
No.
But they're in such a bad spot, I would try and find out everything you can about everyone on this roster. So Reggie Robinson, Justin Hamilton, Bradley Anai, the Utah kid, Randy Gregory, who you mentioned yesterday. You mentioned a couple of those guys, right? I mean, find out everything you need to, because you got to flush all this out. And if you got a keeper, don't make sure you don't lose them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the job for Mike McCarthy and Jerry and Stephen Jones over these last nine games, right, is just figure out who can be a part of this team moving forward. First of all, you've got to decide, are you going to go full-fledged rebuild, right? That's basically answered by what you do in the draft and whether or not you let Dak Prescott walk and draft a quarterback. Or do you maybe try to compete next year and just hope this year was only really, really bad because of injuries and because some of these one-year contracts just didn't pan out? If that's the case, yeah, you got to find, okay, which guys do we have on this roster right now can actually help this team compete for a division title and maybe bigger things in 2021. That's your only thing you're really looking for.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, I talked about this early this week, how the Steelers went through this last year, right? They lost their starting quarterback, backup quarterback, starting running back, two of the top three receivers, starting right tackle, right guard. I mean, they were decimated by injuries. I think they still end up going 8-8. Steelers franchise, of course, and Mike Tomlin's a damn good coach. So even with their third-string quarterback, they were still able to squeak out some wins, and you see now why that team is undefeated, because now they're healthy, everybody's back, and they, when they had all their starters go down, they built up a ton of experienced depth in that time. Now all those guys were backups, and they were starters last year for them. They got a ton of depth on that team, and the Cowboys need to try to have this season, you know, almost replicate what the Steelers did. Try to use this as a way to kind of build the foundation of whatever your future vision and plan is for the team going forward. And it's going to be done with the youth movement. That's just the way it is. And who do you want to be a part of that youth movement? You got to figure it out right now, because it's time to cut. It's time to cut ties with the guys who are old and expensive.
Yep.
Because right now, those old, expensive guys have gotten you one of the worst, win records in the NFL.
Hell, young, expensive guys.
Yeah.
Young, expensive guys, too. That's true. Dudes like Jalen Smith, Ezekiel Elliott, and Marcus Lawrence. I mean, those are some of the highest paid guys you have on your football team, and they've got you in this horrible spot right now.
It's because Jerry's just, they don't know who to pay. You don't pay linebackers, you pay corners. You had one of the best corners in the NFL. You let him walk so you could pay a freaking linebacker.
Who had dropped
foot. Nobody pays linebackers. Exactly.
He thinks with emotion and not logic.
You paid a running back. You paid a running back instead of paying the quarterback.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa. We talk about analytics. Like, I don't know what world
they're living in. Paid a running back and a linebacker with 2 years left on their contracts, too. Right? It's not only did they choose those guys over Dak Prescott and Byron Jones. I'll throw him in the mix, too. But they paid both Zeke and Jalen Smith with 2 years left on their rookie deals because he liked the guys.
Yeah, and they don't have Amari Cooper. I said you shouldn't have paid Amari Cooper. And nobody was like, well, you should pay Amari Cooper. Turns out you got CeeDee Lamb. I'm telling you, you probably could have made it without paying him $20 million a year.
Yeah,
these are the hard decisions you got to make.
Yeah, who would have thought you could have gotten great receivers at any point in the draft?
The Steelers? The Packers?
Oh, wait a minute. We all watch college football and have the last 10 to 15 years.
Deepest position in football.
Yeah, it's frustrating. BK, you just said it, and we all know it. He plays emotion over logic and good business principles, which is really rare because he's such a good businessman. But this is his toy, and this is his thing that he wants to get done. And he's got to have enough say in this. We can't build the build the house, the guest house, without Grandpa thinking that he had a big part in it. Right?
Well, just shut up and let me answer.
Yeah. Well, don't forget, guys. Jerry Jones won 3 Super Bowls for this franchise, so make sure you're grateful and appreciative of that, because he did all of that for you. Yeah.
He was certainly there.
Yeah.
He was certainly there, and he also ended it. Too quickly. Hey, if you maybe you've stopped working out and there's a reason for that, if it's because your ankles, knees, or feet, if you're having problems with that, maybe you've been having problems for a little while, go see the best orthopedic surgeon and doctor in town. It's Dr. Brent Brotzman. If you're in the industry, you know about him because you probably read the book. It's required reading for many programs and for many people that are in the orthopedic world. So you can check that out. You can get to Yahoo if you want to see some of the reviews. And when you get on there, you're going to realize how people really love this guy. So PRP shots, stem cell shots, new graft techniques, all the new stuff he can do. Maybe you just want to go in there and get a checkup. It's Dr. Brent Brotzman, 512-977-0000. They are on Facebook, or you can get to BrotzmanSportsMedicine.com.
I asked the question going into the last break, guys, and it might have sounded like a joke. You know, will the Dallas Cowboys win another football game this year? But that is a very, very serious question that I think we have to ask right now. And we brought up the FPI, ESPN's Football Power Index, which is their formula that predicts a team's success. The FPI is very high on the Texas Longhorns. They actually think the Longhorns are going to run the table the rest of the way in the regular season, and it gives Texas the second-best odds to win the Big 12 behind only Oklahoma State. So the FPI, very, very high on the Longhorns, and we talked about that in the 4 o'clock hour. If you missed it, go to our website, hornfm.com, and catch the podcast. That same metric, though, gentlemen, the FPI is not high on the Dallas Cowboys at all.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, the Cowboys are not favored to win any of their remaining games this season, according to the FPI.
Not one?
Their best chances...
Let me guess, they play the Giants again.
They play the Giants
in Washington again.
In
their own division.
Washington on Thanksgiving.
Ever.
And the New York Football Giants, week 17, the Cowboys are given a 43% chance to win both of those games, according to ESPN's FPI. Guys, they've got games against the Bengals. They're not favored in that one. They've got two against the Eagles. They're not favored in any of those. And yes, we just brought up the football team and the football Giants, and the Cowboys are not favored in either of those games. Mm. You know, we haven't had a whole lot of Trevor Lawrence conversations here in Big D, and I'm not sure the Jets are good enough to win 2 games, guys. They're really, really, really bad right now. But, I mean, that's almost best-case scenario for the Cowboys, right? If you go 2-14, if you know you're not making the playoffs and you know you're not even competing for a spot in the playoffs, which, once again, I know Dallas is only a half game out of a playoff spot right now, but with what we've seen from this football team, there's no chance they're going to make the postseason this year. The best case scenario is to get the highest draft pick you possibly can, right?
Yeah.
You get draft pick that high, you draft the quarterback and let Dak walk. It's that simple.
I mean, if they go 2-14, they're going to be picked top three.
Yeah, you're drafting in the top five.
You can get Fields or Lance.
You get Fields or Lance. That means you let Dak walk. And
Where's Dak?
And then you could trade. Hell, who knows? You may be able to trade up to go get Trevor, depending on what they want. Maybe you can trade away your future and decide, you know what, we want Trevor.
Maybe you can trade him Dak.
You could trade it. You could sign Dak and trade him. Great point. Like, the possibilities are endless if you're that bad. But I would think if you're that bad, you don't sign Dak to that $40 million deal. I think you might as well just draft Justin Fields.
Right. Or as we said yesterday, you need help on the offensive line. You need help on the defensive line. You really don't like your linebackers. You need help all over the secondary. Yeah, actually, anywhere in that top five, there's going to be someone, whether it's a quarterback or not, whether it's a Penei Sewell, or if you want to go get a Patrick Surtain, or whoever. Like, there's enough spots you have to fill.
I think you forgot a few positions there.
What I missed.
Cowboys, everything else.
GM, coach.
Yeah, GM is the biggest one right there. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see. And right, the Cowboys went 4-12 the year before they drafted Zeke Elliott, and they had the fourth overall pick with a 4-12
record. I remember that draft.
Yeah, they took Zeke in the first round. Now, they got Dak Prescott in the fourth round, so the whole draft wasn't a wash. That's phenomenal value. But they got Zeke in the first round. And then in the second round, they got Jalen Smith. And guys, you know who the Cowboys could have had instead of those two players? They could have had Jalen Ramsey, who went one pick after Zeke Elliott to Jacksonville.
God, he looked good Monday.
Yep.
And they could have had Derrick Henry in the second round.
Ooh.
Oh, and I get that.
An even better running back in the second
round.
And still
on a much better deal.
And still would have had Jalen.
You can find a lot of running backs later in the
draft. Yeah. That's the real position. You don't even need to draft a guy as high as Derrick Henry, let alone as high as Zeke Elliott.
No. Yeah, no, finding a running back is, you got to treat that like McConaughey would if he was trying to get laid. You know, he can walk down on 6th Street at 150, and he's fine. You know what I mean? Yeah, like you got to treat the draft that way if you're a team. Like, you know what? You can constantly push that back. We'll find a guy in the fourth round.
Yeah. I think wide receivers started to get like that too, in my opinion. Unless, like I said, there's a Randy Moss exception to everything. But I remember when everybody was high on Saquon Barkley, and I was like, yes, he fits the Randy Moss exception. I still don't know if I'd do it. And I didn't agree with the Ezekiel one at the time. I remember we were at the Domain watching it. At the, I forget the name of the bar, actually. I still remember it like it was yesterday. And I was like, they didn't draft Jalen Ramsey. They drafted a running back, that high? That's crazy. It's insane. And it was insane. It was insanity. And they doubled down on the insanity by signing him to a long-term deal 2 years before they had to do it. It's like, I don't understand.
Well, Rod, if you're going to buy the beach house, you got to get all the stuff that goes with it and get insurance and all that, right? So that's my point, is that they put themselves in this position that when you take him fourth overall, well, you've got to re-sign it. Just like the Texans had to give Laremy Tunsil a deal because they made the trade. It's like, don't put yourself in that position to begin
with. Exactly. Like, if you can't afford the beach house, don't take out a second mortgage on it.
Yes.
Sell the damn beach house. Like,
right.
The Cowboys are, I'm telling you, man, they have put themselves in their own position. They're just like the Texans. Like, they deserve to be here.
It's pure incompetence.
It is.
From
it
the
really
front
is.
Office. There's
yeah.
no doubt
Texans win
it.
That game if they play tomorrow, right?
Yeah. Because Deshaun.
Yeah.
They got Deshaun. They got Ben DiNucci. DiNucci.
Hey, oh, Benny.
Do you guys know who the Cowboys reportedly signed?
Yeah, he who shall not be named. Well, he used to be that. He on the 40 acres.
The great. No.
No, yeah.
Garrett Gilbert. They signed Garrett Gilbert a couple weeks ago.
They got somebody else?
I don't know who you're talking about.
He's back. Cooper Rush has been signed to the Dallas Cowboys practice squad, gentlemen. I am serious. They needed another redhead, I guess.
I guess he knows the stuff.
Danny Dalton got hurt. They had to have a redhead in the quarterback room, so Cooper Rush gets the phone call.
But you got Ben DiNucci, and then you got Garrett Gilbert. I don't see the need for Cooper Rush, really, but maybe I'm wrong.
What are you seeing in DiNucci that I'm not?
No, I'm just saying he's the guy they drafted.
Just in terms of bodies.
Bodies.
You're only going to address two quarterbacks most likely this weekend. Yeah. So
exactly. So you could take that on a week-by-week basis,
Well, once
really.
DiNucci gets concussed behind this Cowboys offensive line, then they'll have Cooper Rush ready to go behind Garrett Gilbert.
That's a good point. They're probably assuming their quarterbacks are going to continue to get hurt.
That's a fair assumption.
With that line? Hell yeah.
That's a good. They should be stockpiling quarterbacks, I guess. All right, Garrett Gilbert, good luck, because he's definitely going to get a shot to play. You too, Ben DiNucci. All right, Roger ranted today on the other side. This offseason, I did theorize or hypothesize that the next evolutionary adaptation on the defensive side of ball and football would be sparked right here in Big 12 play. Well, now that actually has come to fruition. I'll explain why Oklahoma State and their defense embodies that new age approach. And it's no coincidence at all or accident that Oklahoma State's defense is good. It's actually just evolution. I'll explain it on the other side in Rod's Rant of the Day right here on the Triple Option with RBKD right here on 104.9, 101.9 and AM 1260.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
Oh, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butt.
All right, welcome back to Rod's Rant of the Day. Welcome back to the Triple Option. This is Rod's Rant of the Day. All right, this offseason, I made a bold hypothesis. I said, based on my football theory and kind of watching the progression of the game and where it was going, and mostly sitting here in the kind of the petri dish, the laboratory that is the Big 12, I said that if the Big 12 is at the forefront of offense and innovation and advancement offensively with the air raid-ish, hybrid, multiple spread, quarterback-friendly schemes, right? Cliff Kingsbury gets fired from Texas Tech, gets hired as a head coach in the NFL. We had never seen that before. Yeah, we've never seen a quarterback as short as Kyler Murray, right, play in the NFL and start in the NFL and play at as high a level as he's playing. We never had a walk-on get drafted number one overall. The Big 12 has changed fundamentally the way people see and really the business of football, and it's because of the offensive evolution. Pat Mahomes is another example of that. So I said, sooner or later, if all the evolutionary adaptations on offense are happening in the Big 12 and it's a laboratory, somebody somewhere in the Big 12 is going to be smart enough to come up with a defensive counter, right? The evolutionary adaptation to that on the defensive side of the ball has to start somewhere in the Big 12. The example that I gave was John Heacock, right? John Heacock and Matt Campbell say 40 to 50 teams, NFL and college. We're talking about the Clemsons of the world and NFL teams. They come to our state of all places in the offseason to study John Heacock's 3-3-5 stack, the inverted Tampa 2, as a fellow football theorist Ian Boyd calls it.
Because the Ames is so nice in the summer.
No, it's because, okay. And not because they have great athletes either.
No, it's
only
not.
People coming down there to study that system, and it's really been interesting. And when they asked Matt Campbell, you know, what led to you guys having this, you know, this really advanced, revolutionary defensive system, he said, "quote The conference is what forced it to happen." All right, that's evolution, right? The environment around them, the stimuli around, they're reacting to it, right? So the offensive advancement and innovation in the Big 12 has almost forced John Heacock. John Heacock tells the story in 2017, right, before Texas. It was the bye week before Texas. He comes up with the inverted Tampa 2-3-3-5 stack defense. And he said he did it, you know, obviously because they were struggling defensively. And they beat OU the next week, actually. But then Texas stumbles against them. And they end up having one of the better defenses in the conference that year in 2017. As a matter of fact, Malcolm Roach informed all the Texas fans that Texas stole the idea and ran their lightning package with the middle safety, as Iowa State has popularized. So it has been proven that at least starting the spark of, you know, defensive counters is starting in the Big 12. But I went and started looking at some of the other quotes from defensive minds in the Big 12. And I got quotes from Matt Campbell, Matt Rhule, Gary Patterson, and even Mike Gundy. And that's what I'll end this thing when we start talking about Mike Gundy. But when Matt Campbell was asked about what makes the 3-3-5 stack, that inverted Tampa 2 defense that Iowa State plays, what makes it so effective, he said it allows us to create matchups in our favor. And I thought to myself, man, you never really hear defensive coaches or, you know, with a defensive ideology talk about creating matchups in their favor. Usually an offensive coach says, no, we're creating matchups in our favor on offense because they're all about, you know, the matchup advantage, whether it be skill or scheme or whatever. And I thought to myself, I think somebody else refer to defensive matchups in the Big 12 and almost with an offensive mindset. And it clicked. It was Gary Patterson. Gary Patterson, quote, "What we say at our place is we want to play defense like offense. We want to be able to audible. And the only way you can audible is to have versatility. And you have versatility because of speed from my viewpoint." And the key to that John Heacock defense, I'll say, is versatility, the star position, right? Greg Eisworth played that star position. That's kind of what inspired him to put the defense out there. He needed another middle field safety with a linebacker mentality, a hybrid player. And what Gary Patterson said, he said he puts a premium on finding hybrid players. He said, his quote is, and I love this, he's talking about Darryl Washington, but he said, if we could walk our linebackers out on a wideout and he could play man coverage from a linebacker position, when you can do that, you can do anything you want to. Started me thinking, remember when Texas had Gary Johnson, who was a track guy at linebacker, and Malik Jefferson, who were basically the two fastest players on the defense playing linebacker? That's what they had.
Yeah.
And Gary Patterson said, when you got two guys that you can line up at linebacker and you can line them up on wideouts, then you can do that. You can do anything you want defensively. And that's when Todd Orlando was a dominant defensive coordinator because he could do anything. When my linebackers are as fast as my DBs, I can do anything. And that's kind of what Gary Patterson is saying. And I went further deep into it. So here's another quote from Gary Patterson. He said, he was asked about this in Big 12 Media Days. He said, what's a Mike linebacker? We don't have a middle. The A-gap guy, most of ours here lately have been running backs or safeties we converted. In this league, you better have linebackers who can vertical wide receivers, that's carry them, cover them, or at least run with them a little bit. The prototype of the Big Ten linebacker there, 240, 250, that's a hard guy to play with in certain schemes in this league unless you're not going to get in any vertical speed races. That's been one of the things that's helped us to play defense. Trevon Howard, who was with the Chargers, was a safety. Garrett Wallow, he was a safety. Montrell Wilson was a safety. So he's getting into basically how he recruits and what he values. Matt Rhule, after spending 3 years in the Big 12, here's what he had to say about hybridism and multiplicity. He said, I would just call it the positionless player. The days of saying, hey, we need a Mike linebacker or we need this. There's just certain traits you got to look for. But you're looking for positionless players. The offenses in this league are changing, so the defenses have to be able to do a lot of things. I think we're just looking for traits now. We're looking for, hey, this guy can really do this or this guy can really do that. I think you're seeing a lot more of that in the combine as college football has really spread out. We're going to try and stay ahead of the curve on that and bring guys who can do a lot of different things on the roster. He went on to say, I think it comes down to traits and how they fit, and that's why the whole process we had, hey, this vision is for what a three technique looks like in our defense, doesn't mean we have to find the best three technique, just the one guy that fits our defense best. What's the vision we have for them and within the defense what they can do? As you're thinking about that, and this is where we get to Mike Gundy, see, because Matt Rhule probably figured out this conference faster than any coach who's ever been in the Big 12, other than Bob Stoops. And he said, we look for traits now in defense. That's all we look for. We look for traits and certain skill sets. I'm not looking for necessarily a this type of defensive end or this type of linebacker. I'm just looking for traits. Maybe it's speed. Maybe it's ball skills. Maybe it's, you know, quickness, whatever it may be. So this is what Mike Gundy said about his defense. And this is, and pay attention to this, right? It's a little lengthy quote, but it's really, really good. He said, quote, this shows you why that defense is not an accident, people. It is just Mike Gundy studying the Big 12 like great coaches like Matt Rhule, Matt Campbell. He said about 3 or 4 years ago, we changed our thought process in recruiting. We switched more scholarships to defense. It's either 2 or 3 years ago. I can't really remember with the recruiting classes. We've eliminated recruiting corner safeties and linebackers. We recruit a certain player that we feel like can play any of those five spots. And if they're fast enough to cover, then good. You might have a corner that's playing a free safety spot. Traditionally, you take a 210 or a 215-pound guy and put him at safety. In this league, he can't cover anybody. If he's 215 and he can cover slot wide receivers, he'll be playing in the NFL pretty soon. A lot of times, we don't bring guys in already made to play in the NFL here at Oklahoma State. So we're looking for guys that can run, have the ability to make plays when the ball's in the air. And when you talk about Jerick Bernard or Tanner McAllister, or you're talking about Colby Peel, you talk about Trey Sterling, even Thomas Harper. Little Harper is a guy that bounces around and plays a lot of different spots. He said, we're talking about fit here. We have five guys that play. You're playing corners and three safeties. Malcolm Rodriguez has bumped inside, outside. He got so big that we had to move him inside. At some point, his ability to cover really fast guys in the slot was not as good as it was when he showed up here. He went on to say, we're not always accurate in how much weight and body mass a young man can put on. We might recruit a legitimate corner that's 175 in high school and might feel like he can put on 20 pounds. If he does, we move him to safety, move him to linebacker. That simple. Go look at the defense that he's got. Gentlemen,
I'm looking at
Malcolm
it right
Rodriguez
now.
Came in as a safety, 6'205", now 220. Amen Agbagbamiga, 6'1", 211 when he came in. Now he's 240. Trey Sterling was a safety. Kobe Harvell Peel, came in at 6'209. Rodarius Williams, who's the brother of Greedy Williams, by the way, 6'170 came in. Yeah, little brother. Jerick Bernard Converse, they got him out of Shreveport, 6'1", 195. Calvin Bundage came in at 6'2", 190. He's now 225. So what he's saying is, I'm just going to recruit hybrids across the board. I'm not recruiting a guy to play safety or corner or to play linebacker specifically. I'm going to recruit speed. I'm going to recruit a guy who has ball skills. I'm going to recruit a really good football instincts. And we're just going to see where his body goes. And if he's 6 foot, 190 and can really run, well, hell, he can play corner.
Yeah.
If he's 6 foot, 215 and can really run, I'll put him at safety. He's 6 foot, 230 and can run because all I bring in is guys who can run. He's going to play linebacker. That's it.
And you give yourself options depending on where their body goes.
Depending on where their body goes. Because sometimes their body goes places you didn't know they were going to go. You're like, oh, I didn't know that guy's going to be that. But if you recruit speed, you'll get a Gary Johnson, so you'll be fun.
Right.
Because in this league, that's what you're going to need. So a couple of the quotes I want to get to, because that's why I think people think this defense of Mike Gundy's is an accident. It is not an accident. He studied this league, and this is what he came up with.
So get your
facts straight. 3-4 years ago. And Matt Rhule's another guy, studied this league. And what Matt Rhule did at Baylor said, I'm recruiting speed. How the hell would I recruit anything else? Speed and hybrid players, if you want to play in this league. And I think you've seen over time, and Gary Patterson, obviously, he's been one of those guys. It's a great quote from Mike Tomlin when he was describing where the new age football is going, pace and space. He said, look like what you hunt. Look like what you hunt.
That's a great line.
Right? So you're going after, you know, the Cheetah and, hell, the guys in this league. You're talking about Hollywood Brown and all these great skill players, right? Chuba Hubbard, Tylan Wallace. You can just keep naming them down the list over the years. And you need guys that can run. And my man Barton Simmons, great study by Barton Simmons. We'll try to end it close to this note. He did a study on linebackers and the 40 time and how it relates to their draft stock. And what he found was that, he said it was eye-popping to him. What he found was that the 40-yard dash time, it directly related to the draft stock of linebackers more than any other position. Meaning, if you ran a fast 40 at linebacker, it almost guaranteed you to get drafted pretty high in that position group as opposed to running a fast 40 as a DB or a running back or a wide receiver. If you looked at it, and he went and broke it down, he said the average 40 time for linebackers drafted in the top 100 of last year's draft was a 4.5. The average 40-yard dash time for undrafted linebackers last year was a 4.75. You just can't have slow linebackers these days. Here's some great numbers from my man Barton Simmons. 10 off-ball linebackers were drafted in the first 3 rounds, all right? Their average height and weight, 6'2", 213 coming out of high school. This year in 2020, first-round linebackers' average 40-yard dash time was 4.6. Their vertical was around 35.8, so close to 36. 8 out of the 10 linebackers drafted in the first 3 rounds played on both sides of the ball in high school. Remember Nick Saban saying what he thought the problem was, why offense was ahead of defense?
They're all playing offense.
Because everybody wants to play offense, right? He's like, no. So a lot of these guys were playing offense, and then they basically got recruited to play defense because they were really great athletes, right? So these guys are football players, really skilled. He said 4 of the top 10 linebackers drafted in the first 3 rounds were DBs in high school, getting back to that speed. Actually, strangely enough, the 2 linebackers drafted from the Big 12 in the first round, first time ever in Big 12 history, Kenneth Murray and Jordan Brooks. They were the only linebackers drafted in the top 10 linebackers last year that played just linebacker in high school. They didn't play offense. They didn't play other positions. But they were spread babies because they played in Texas. And you play linebacker in Texas, you're playing against spread air raids all the time. You got to be great in space. And I think that's why they actually thrived in space. And in the modern NFL, which we all say is getting what? Starting to look more and more like Big 12 football?
Absolutely.
They're starting to draft more and more Big 12 defensive players because you're basically having to defend Big 12 concepts over and over again.
In high school, to get back to your point about those two guys who are already linebackers, especially in the state of Texas, they're already doing the job for you. They've already spun down their own personnel so you don't have to go get a linebacker or a safety, right, and move him around there.
Exactly. It's all about matchups, right?
They've already done that.
Yeah, and that's why. Because
that kid, Brooks, would have been at a different position probably 20 years ago.
No doubt. And that's why Steve Keim, people don't really like Steve Keim from the Cardinals, but the Cardinals defense this year is one of the best in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually been, like, I think before that game last night, or not last night, earlier this week, it was a top 2 defense. I think it was 2nd in scoring defense. Remember, they have a theory. They love position flex, right? Deion Buchanan over the years, Honey Badger over the years, now Isaiah Simmons. They got Buda Baker. He's always believed in that. Since the 2014 draft class, they've been doing that. Now it's starting to pay off for him because he was ahead of the curve. Back then, you having all these hybrid players, they were considered tweeners. What do we say about these hybrid players? Now they call them position flex. Now they're hybrids. 5 years ago, they were called tweeners and nobody wanted them. them, right? It's all about the labeling, right? They may be all prostitutes, but the escort costs more than the call girl, and the hooker's at the bottom of that barrel, right? You know what I mean?
And tell me about it.
Exactly. That's what tweeners are. Tweeners are hookers, essentially. They're the bottom of the barrel. You call somebody a tweener, you're almost disrespecting them. But when you call them a hybrid or a position flex, that's Isaiah Simmons. He'll be drafted in the first round. So there's this kind of reprogramming going on in football right now, but there's no doubt about it, the Big 12 is kind of leading the way in being able to adapt to these new hybrid multiple spread offenses, and it's really, really fascinating. It's fascinating stuff. And remember what I told you about the Cardinals in the game against the Seahawks, how they make their biggest plays. In overtime, they get a sack and they force an interception by Russell Wilson, probably the MVP this year, because they play a coverage with no defensive linemen. And like several times in overtime, when he threw the pick and when he got sacked, they play 6 DBs and 5 linebackers, 0 defensive linemen. And Russ Wilson was like, what the hell is going on? That's the new age of football.
Great stuff. Very timely, especially considering they're playing Oklahoma State. I hadn't heard those quotes from Gundy, and that's very interesting. I did know with Gary Patterson, it felt like he did start this. And Jerry Hughes and also Ty Summers. Jerry Hughes was a running back in high school, ended up winning the Hendricks.
Yeah.
As a defensive lineman. And then Ty Summers was a quarterback and ended up being a really damn good defensive end.
Yeah. It ain't a mistake, man. This is that defense, that vision he had coming to fruition, where all these guys are flexible and versatile and they all can run.
Who's the kid here? Are you kidding me?
I feel like we need a Gundy drop for every segment this week with Texas like taking on Oklahoma State.
I like that.
Good stuff, Rod's rant of the day, talking Oklahoma State's defense and sort of the new age of football defense across all levels. It's the triple option with RBKD. We've got an off the record two type segment coming up. How many times do you have to get married before you realize marriage might not be for you? Up next. Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD, alongside Rod Babers and Kevin Dunn. I'm BK Brad Kellner. Appreciate y'all spending some or all of your Wednesday afternoon with us. We'll be here until 7 o'clock, until Rick Epstein and Jeff Power take over with Under the Lights.
Under the Lights!
Not very in sync there, gentlemen.
That was all me.
The Jewish judge gives you a 4 out of 10.
We don't have to be in sync. Come on.
So 2 hours of high school football conversation coming your way at 7. We will get back into some Major League Baseball and the World Series and some of the fallout from the Justin Turner situation in about 15 minutes. But we've got an off-the-record 2-style story to get to, gentlemen. And we go to the Dr. Phil television program for this one, which is awesome. I'm so thankful for Dr. Phil. I don't watch it that much, but the only time I ever hear about it is when there's a crazy on there. And whenever there's a crazy out there, I know that can be turned into a radio bit. So my ears perk up, my eyes get wide whenever Dr. Phil has something trending on social media. Of course, from the Dr. Phil program, we got the...
Catch me outside.
Oh, yes.
Girl.
Classic.
Danielle Bregoli, one of my favorite people on the face of the earth.
She's a class act.
She's very classy, absolutely. And today we have a story about Cassie. Not classy.
Cassie.
Unintentional rhyming there. Cassie is from the United States. She appeared on Dr. Phil last week, and she was looking for advice from Dr. Phil about where her relationships are going wrong. We've got some audio from Cassie, the introduction for her and what her situation or scenario, if you will, is.
Nice.
And before I play the audio, I'll just mention one thing.
She Cassie.
Well, C-A-S-S-E-Y is Cassie.
That's strange.
I guess that's better than Casey, right? Casey with two S's would be
a little bit weird. Don't you go I-E?
Well, that's her parents' fault.
Okay.
So, her parents.
It started the problem.
Her parents could be dead. You know, we don't know that.
They probably didn't stay married.
Yeah. Well, Cassie has been married 10 times, gentlemen, and she is reportedly close to divorcing her 10th different husband. This is not like, oh, there's been a couple of remarriages in there. No, she's been married to 10 different dudes, and she is apparently about to divorce dude number 10. She's 56 years young. I'll let her sort of explain what's going on.
I don't know why I've been married. I don't know why 10 times. When I'm in a marriage and I just can't take it anymore, I'm usually the first one to say, that's it, we're getting a divorce. and I quit. I remember each marriage very clearly. Unfortunately, I've not ever married for money. I believe that I have been in love with each person that I have married. In the past, I have cheated on them after they have cheated on me. I have never cheated first in the relationship. My longest marriage that I've had was 8 years, and then my shortest marriage was 6 months. Last time I added it up, I have lived in over 76 houses, and I'm 56 years old. Right now, I am not happy with where my life is at. I am on the verge of ending the relationship between me and husband number 10. He thinks I'm a control freak and that that is causing problems in our life. It's just that I don't want to spend the rest of my life alone. I don't care how many marriages it takes. I will keep trying until I find the one that can love me.
Cassie doesn't care how many marriages it takes. She's going to keep trying until she can find the man who loves her.
Shocking this one isn't working out whenever she refers to him as husband number 10.
Mm. Yes, yes.
I mean, at what point, this is, I guess, a question for both sides of this, right? At what point, if you're Cassie, do you just realize, all right, marriage is probably not for me? Like, you can still find love without marrying somebody.
Number four,
and
probably.
Considering none of her marriages have worked out, you should probably just stop paying for marriages and even going through that process. But then for the dudes, like, you find out she's been married 9 previous times and you're husband number 10. Like, why the hell are you getting married to her? Is that not the biggest red flag in the history of the world?
It is, and maybe guys are pulling what women do a lot, which is I can be the one, I'll be the different one, right? I'll be able to save them, I'll be able, and women can fall into that trap. And maybe that's what these guys are doing, but if she's not loaded, well, first off, she sounds loaded, but if she doesn't have...
She's got to be low just off the alimony, right?
Well, no, I was talking about she sounded like she was like on pills or something
like that.
Oh,
you're talking about she's like
that.
Wasted.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get ready to... Right on, baby.
She ever married to Sark?
But I don't know what the hell is going on with this. I just don't. I mean, after four, wouldn't you, like you said, BK, wouldn't you just say, hey, I'm going to try and make a relationship work? And also, it would save a little bit of the, I'm sure her friends get on her if she has any. Like, this is a sad story.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's got a lot of problems.
Yeah.
Most of it probably stems from childhood. She says she's lived in 76 homes. She's 56 years old. Most of that happened during her childhood, probably. So she's moved around a lot. You know what I mean? 76
right.
homes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no way that's all during the marriage.
In your adulthood. Yeah, exactly. Unless you guys got a lot of money and y'all just moving around the world, that's probably not the case either. She is in love with the idea of love,
yes.
But she doesn't know like that love takes sacrifice and that love's not always pretty and it's hard. Mm. So to her... All she knows about love is the newlywed phase and marriage, and that's her idea of love. So when that fades, her idea of love is faded. It's over. It's like, no. That's just the beginning of it. That's just to show everybody that you guys are committed. But now the hard work truly begins. So she's just in love with the idea of being in love. That's what most people on those reality TV shows, when they go on there, they want to find their soulmate. They're not falling in love with somebody on that show. They're falling in love with the idea of love.
Yeah.
The idea of it. And that's what the basher pumps it up for.
Yeah, she basically said that too. Yeah. I mean, she's like, oh, at the first sign that something's going wrong, I'm usually the person to pull the plug on this.
Yeah. Yeah. She sounded like some of my friends who were watching the Cowboys right now. And that's one thing, if your team looks like that in the you know what, second quarter, I just said screw it, I turned it off, I went to go do other stuff. You can't do that with a marriage, and that's what it sounded like. She said, yeah, you know, I'm usually the first one to say I quit.
Yeah, I mean, I blame the dudes more than I blame her.
I'm with you.
Honestly.
I agree with this, because she's addicted to marriage. You can make a rational decision.
And I assume they know that, right? That has to come up in conversation when you're 56 and you're talking about marriage. Hey, have you been married before? And she's got to say, yeah, 9 times.
Nine times?
Well, if you can't hear it, just talking to her.
Yeah.
These guys have talked to her. We just heard her for 20 seconds, and I would tell you she's...
Is she good looking?
No.
I haven't seen her.
I'll show you.
Not that it matters.
It matters.
It does matter.
It's in marriages, yeah.
It always matters.
There we go.
It always matters.
Oh.
So she probably was at one point.
She's successful, according to the little clip I watched on Dr. Phil. She's like a successful businesswoman, so she's got that going for her.
Oh, maybe.
That's maybe part of the
appeal. Maybe she's a sugar mama then. Maybe they're marrying her for the money, and then she finds out they're gold diggers.
After four, for me, it'd be like after one, and I don't think I'm having any marriages, but like if I do somehow get married, God forbid, and the first one doesn't work out, I'm going to take that as a sign that I probably never should have gotten married in the first place. Sure as hell, I'm not letting it get to four
yeah,
or ten.
for some people, marriage is a cult, and they literally, for her, it is. Like, she's got to be married. And I'm one of those people who never really believed in marriage. So for me, it's to get married once, I'm like, oh, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
I respect the sanctity of matrimony too much to just randomly get married, you know, 2, 3, 4 times. I'm with you. If this one doesn't work out with the one I'm with now, it's done. Mm. I'm done.
Well, Cassie.
Ain't happening again.
Cassie and I have the same stance on finding the right one, guys.
I don't care how many marriages it takes. I will keep trying until I find the one that can love me.
Oh, my God.
That's all I'm looking for. What? One that can love me. I don't care how many it takes.
What an S show. Yeah. The more you play her, the more I'm with you guys. I totally blame the guys. I was trying to think of Liz Taylor. Liz Taylor got close to that.
Yeah, she was like 6.
That's 7.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's your off the record 2 from Dr. Phil. Good luck to you, Cassie. It's the triple option with RBKD. Let's talk baseball. We'll recap the World Series up next.